Russia said it had successfully tested its Burevestnik cruise missile, described by Moscow as being capable of piercing any defense shield. Donald Trump responds by saying, hey, we do have nuclear submarine or a nuclear submarine off your shore. Discussing the test as inappropriate. Is this all posturing related to Russia, Ukraine, or does this transcend that and involve more geopolitical global issues between Russia and the United States?
Yeah, this transcends it. It certainly is related to it, but it also goes beyond it. And this Burevestnik missile is a significant advancement technologically, and it just makes the job a lot more difficult to, Trump's earlier this summer, he talked about wanting to have this big golden dome that would be this impervious shield that would protect us. It was never going to be the case. I mean, it's kind of an aspirational situation because the technology of existing ICBMs and other kinds of hypersonic missiles, the Oreshnik, they already we don't have the capability to defend against any of those. This one adds a new layer of complexity. So it's just another thing that we couldn't intercept. And it's certainly our missiles are the same way for Russia. They can't intercept a majority of our missile force either, whether from a submarine or from a silo or a bomber that we may fire, et cetera. Basically, this just restates what already exists. Don't go to nuclear war because it's going to be mutually assured destruction. That's the bottom line.
Literally just wrote mutually assured destruction down, because if you think about it, we were getting further away from the concept of mutually assured destruction because of our ability to shoot down rockets that are coming our way. Well, if you can't shoot down the rockets coming your way, they have to be nuclear bombs. No one's going to want to launch them. We've got the technology. They've got the technology. So it seems to me, at least in terms of Cold War reality and nuclear reality, we're kind of back to a status quo thing here.
Yeah, it doesn't really change anything. Just on a technical capability, just looking at what this weapon will do, it is pretty amazing. We got to admit. Because as far as I'm aware, the first missile that uses nuclear fuel to actually propel it, which means basically kind of like an aircraft carrier, a nuclear powered aircraft carrier that never needs fuel. So it literally can fly forever or as long as the components will allow, which means it can fly all over the world. It can come in from angles where your weapon systems are not oriented, places where historically there was no threat. So nothing is off the table here. So it just adds another layer of don't get into a nuclear war, but it doesn't change anything in the overall game, as you pointed out.
Well, and that's the first time I've ever had it described that way, this sort of unlimited range kind of thing. You're talking about unlimited range at hypersonic speeds.
It's actually subsonic speed. It's like a cruise missile. It's not too much dissimilar from our Tomahawk cruise missile, except it has no limits on range. It literally can fly everywhere because of the nuclear fuel.
Okay, well, let's pivot back over to the actual fight and war going on between Russia and Ukraine. It appears as though Zelensky is trying to entertain another discussion on peace negotiations. Venue seems to be an issue, but he doesn't want to move out of any area. He doesn't want to cede any area to Russia. In other words, week number whatever, Daniel Davis, we're kind of in a status quo position relative to the bargaining and the negotiations, are we not?
Yeah, the Ukraine side wants to have a just and lasting peace, according to their definition. The Russians I actually had or will have on my show later this morning. The deputy UN ambassador for Russia, whom I point blank and pressed him and asked, I said, if you don't get these conditions that you're asking for, what will you do? And he just says, we'll either get this negotiation or we'll win it on the battlefield. And he said, there's no way around it. And he laid it out their conditions, which what Putin has said many times is the root causes of the war, the NATO, the so-called demilitarization, denazification, and the territory, et cetera. So you have what Zelensky's saying is a fair and just peace, and what the Russians are saying are wholly incompatible. And then you have to look at who's got the military capacity. And right now, I mean, we know where that's going to go, but there are two big pockets where up to 10,000 Ukrainian soldiers are in a cauldron right now. And if things don't change pretty quick, if they don't withdraw from those things, they could lose thousands of troops in a short period of time as Russia just continues its relentless and methodical move forward. However slow it is, it still moves forward.
Well, in addition to their own troops. Russia seems to have an extra source of troops. We've talked about this before. North Koreans on the front lines and providing some military assistance for this conflict. I just heard, I believe it was this morning or yesterday, that the reward to North Korea may be that it's getting assistance from Russia insofar as the development of its cruise missile technology for nuclear weapons. Any suggestion of truth to that, Daniel Davis?
That's been suggested from the beginning. The first time that North Korean troops went in to help Russians in the Kursk area, there's also been reports over the last couple of months that there could be as many as 70,000 North Korean troops come over. And one of the things I suspected, just from a military analyst perspective, is that the North Koreans that were sending troops over there, not so much a big help to Russia because they don't really need it. And it's actually a headache to try and incorporate large formations that speak a different language and aren't used to operating the way you do as a sop to Kim Jong-un for the artillery rounds he's getting, the missiles, the physical missiles he's been getting. He's getting combat experience for his troops that they haven't had since, 1950s. So, and now then you see they're taking what they had already from the Kursk area and they're expanding it within. So I think this is just an example and an opportunity for North Korea to expand its combat capability.
Fair enough on that. And you have brought up the troop experience component before, and it's something really worth noting considering that's a real powder keg going on in between North and South Korea as well. Let's dive back over to Israel, Gaza. As I said, I think last week, and I've certainly mentioned on the morning show, if you're shooting at each other, I don't know how you can call it a ceasefire, but there still seems to be some quote unquote warfare going on right now. Where are we with moving toward phase two? Phase one, declaration of a ceasefire. Obviously, complications with that. But we need to move forward with the peace process. Is it falling apart, Daniel Davis?
I'm not sure it ever fell together completely. It's definitely tenuous is the best you can put it, but there continues to be, offensive operations going on in the Gaza Strip, in the West Bank, in Lebanon, even some in Yemen of recent days. And there's different stories. You can decide who you want to believe. We don't really know really where the truth is. You have Hamas saying with a Red Cross that they're doing everything they can to get the remainder of those deceased hostage remains back. The Israeli side said, no, we have intelligence that they're holding on to them and they're not returning them. And so that we're going to go back in, maybe militarily, et cetera. We're going to push the so-called yellow line back further into them. We're going to reduce the amount of food aid going into the entire Gaza Strip, which, by the way, whatever you may view on the situation, you can't do that international law. You can't punish an entire population because of what the leadership of the Hamas is doing, but that's what's happening right now. And so that is just it continues to undermine trust in all directions, if there was any at all. And it is better than it was, but it's not really a ceasefire. And so far, until you get those hostage remains back, or at least that resolved, I don't think they're even going to start negotiation for the so-called phase two. So I think we're still in a sort of phase one-ish time.
Okay. Insofar, and before we part company here, getting the hostages, the deceased hostages back, I think you had previously suggested this isn't really Hamas foot dragging so much as they just don't know where the remains might happen to be. Is that still your...
Not that they didn't know where they were, but that they couldn't get at them. But now, of course, the Israeli side is saying, no, they do know where they are. They know how to get them, and they're just not giving them up. And I'm not in a position to say whether that's true or not true, but that's the accusation. So both sides are lobbying counter accusations, and we have the risk of this thing blowing back up at any time. That's the bottom line.
Maybe prayer is in order, since we don't really have any easy solutions.
Indeed, there is, and I do that on a daily basis.
Amen, brother. Pray for the folks that are dealing with those terrible situations. Daniel Davis, Deep Dive. Again, get it where you get your podcasts. I always enjoy your thoughtful analysis, Daniel Davis. I'll look forward to doing it again next week, sir.
Always my pleasure, my friend.